Rodney King and JFK, a whitewash, a hoodwink on the USA. Martin Luther King was murdered too. Another cover up would make a fool of you. Whitewash, whitewash. You can't cover up what happened to Rodney King, and we know it's our eyes. We should have believed. Died for what we believe, November 22nd, 1963, in a crossfire of bullets while the cameras rolled, and the people heard the shots from the grassy knoll. Now the Warren Commission gave their lengthy report. A lone nut did it all, but he never got to court. But they couldn't cover up what we saw on TV. Now we know it's our eyes, we should have believed.
Hello, this is Paul Kangas, and this is a timeline history of the facts that led up to the CIA assassination of President John Kennedy, journalist Dorothy Kilgallen, Dr. Martin Luther King, Senator Robert Kennedy, and the Vietnam War that murdered 2 million people. Kennedy and King are dead, but the problem is not that they're dead. The problem is that the CIA was able to kill these people and get away with it. If the CIA and the secret government is allowed to kill anyone it wants to at will, no one is safe. Democracy is not safe. You are not safe. No elected official is safe. If democracy is not safe here in America, from the military-industrial complex, it is not safe anywhere in the world. So what we're doing is shining a light on a crime that's a crime against all of humanity. If what we're saying is true, America is nothing but a banana republic. What we are doing is investigating how the CIA, the military-industrial complex, and the media were able to kill a top elected official and then cover it up using the mass media. If the mass media covered this up for the CIA, what else have they covered up over the years? What are they covering up now? By examining the assassinations, we can learn how our secret government operates. By shining a spotlight on how the media covers up for the CIA's Murder Incorporated back in 1963 and twice in 1968 with the murder of Dr. Martin Luther King and Senator Robert Kennedy, we can reveal their abuses and possibly stop it. Knowledge is very powerful that way. This may save the next president. This may give President Clinton courage to proceed along a more progressive path once he sees he has public support and the assassins have been exposed. Now, to understand the assassination, it's necessary to take a step back. We begin in the year 1917. We begin in that year because we have found U.S. Army files from that year indicating that the U.S. Army began spying on the family of Dr. Martin Luther King in 1917. The article appeared in the Memphis Commercial Appeal on 3/21/93, pages 1-5. This was a front page story, and the story even was considered to be a Pulitzer Prize winning story by journalist Stephen Tompkins. By the way, every single fact that we state on this program, we can document. And if you would like documentation on anything, please write to us. Our address is P.O. Box 422-644, San Francisco 94142, My name is Paul Kangas. The Army spied on the King family for many years. The next significant date is 1935, when a man named Prescott Bush headed the Senate Banking Committee. They were helping bankers take over the United States monetary system and the Federal Reserve System in order to create a national debt. So this is when the Senate, certain people in the Senate, began a massive campaign to create a mechanism to encourage the rich to give more contributions to their campaigns by giving the rich certain privileges, by selling bonds to the rich so that the rich could live off the taxpayers, including by selling bonds to fund national projects rather than raising taxes. A few senators realized they could get more contributions from rich people, because if you raise taxes, contributions go down. So they found a way around raising taxes on the rich and instead gave benefits to the rich. Only rich people can afford to buy these municipal bonds. And the rich people then live without working off the municipal bonds. So Prescott Bush and his friends in the Senate Banking Committee began selling bonds in order to make the rich richer and make the population of the United States poorer in the long run, and created the massive national debt we have in 1994. If you think the savings and loan scandal of the 90s was a huge ripoff, wait till you carefully examine what Senator Prescott Bush started doing in 1935 that ripped off the whole country's future for the next 100 years, unless something is done about it now in 1994. Next year, 1939, General Motors of Germany builds the first jet plane, the ME-262, the first jet plane in history, and gives it to the Nazis. This was written up in a book called The Industrial Reorganization Act, S-1167, Part 4A, published 1974 by the U.S. Government Printing Office. This is a period when Wernher von Braun and Henry Kissinger are members of the all-Nazi party preparing for war against Poland and Russia. Next year, 1943, Congressman Jerry Voorhees exposes how Prescott Bush and the banks are ripping off the United States economy, and he writes a book called Out of Debt, Out of Danger, which causes Prescott Bush to begin a dirty tricks campaign against California Congressman Jerry Voorhees. This book is still available, and it's available from us, as are all the articles mentioned here. 1945, World War II ends, and now we see the marriage between the CIA and the Mafia. You have to remember what caused the defeat of fascism in Europe. It wasn't just the Allies over there. It was the resistance movements in France, in Germany, in all the European countries. The underground resistance movement fought the Nazis and beat the Nazis eventually. Well, in Italy, the underground resistance movement became so powerful that it took over the government of Italy. So, at the end of World War II, the OSS, the parent of the CIA, convinced New York Governor Dewey to release Mafia leader Lucky Luciano from prison to help the OSS break the Italian unions and restore the OSS's lucrative drug smuggling from Italy. To do this, the OSS used Lucky Luciano to rebuild the Italian Mafia, to control the Italian unions and the U.S. unions. Next, Prescott Bush and the Committee of 100 Republicans in about 1946 run an ad in a Los Angeles newspaper trying to recruit someone to run for Congress against California Congressman Jerry Voorhees, to stop Voorhees from talking about how the Federal Reserve was being used to rip off the U.S. and create a massive national debt to fund the rich people. Prescott Bush was a member of the Senate Banking Committee who secretly was driving the U.S. into this national debt to benefit their friends, which Voorhees was exposing daily on the floor of the Senate and in his book. 1947, Nixon hires Jack Ruby as a hitman and spy to spy on the unions in Chicago. 1949, the CIA created by Allen Dulles, Alan Bissell, General Charles Cabell, Prescott Bush, and former Nazi officers that the U.S. brought into this country secretly in the Treaty of Fort Hunt. The Nazis actually set the tone for American foreign policy in the following years and helped the Army and the FBI spy on and attack the King family and President Kennedy. To see a great documentation on this, see Carl Oglesby's article in Covert Action Bulletin of Fall of 1990, page 8. It was entitled The Secret Treaty of Fort Hunt. That's Carl Oglesby. 1951, Prescott Bush creates the ticket of Nixon and Eisenhower. This is from the book entitled Bush by Felix Green, G-R-E-E-N-E. 1952, Nixon elected vice president, representing Bush and his Committee of 100. 1954, Vice President Nixon helps Dulles and the Senate Banking Committee control heroin traffic in the U.S. You can read about a lot of this heroin traffic history in The Politics of Heroin in Southeast Asia by McCoy. 1956, Nixon coordinates drug traffic out of Cuba with Bebe Rebozo to fund CIA black bag operations and to fund Nazi spies that are hiding in the American space agencies and in Latin America. Again, see the Oglesby article. 1957, May. Vice President Nixon visits Vietnam and tells the French drug dealers the U.S. will protect heroin, if the French are kicked out by community leaders in Vietnam fighting the drug traffic. And Pepsi-Cola builds the largest Pepsi bottling plant in Asia, in Laos, which becomes the largest heroin manufacturing plant in Asia and becomes famous for never having bottled a single bottle of Pepsi-Cola. This became part of the movie Air America, starring Robert Downey. Excellent movie. I liked the movie so much I bought the video. Also in 1957, Nixon visited Jack Ruby in Chicago, according to FBI documents. 1958, John Kennedy meets Dr. Martin Luther King. They become friends working on the civil rights issues. King organizes to help JFK run for the presidency. 1959, Cuban people kick the drug dealers and Pepsi-Cola out of Cuba, so Bush and Nixon create Operation 40 to try and take back Cuba, that is, take back Cuban sugar plantations and the child prostitution business and the casinos. George Bush becomes a secret senior CIA officer in Miami, which heads Operation Zapata, a wing of the military invasion of Cuba, Operation Zapata. And Miami becomes the largest CIA base in the U.S. at the University of Miami, followed by New Orleans and Washington, D.C. 1960, Nixon loses the election to some underdog, Irish Catholic named John Kennedy, thanks to Dr. Martin Luther King and the Civil Rights Movement. President Kennedy begins to stop Nixon and the Bush's drug traffic from Cuba, from Vietnam, and Turkey. 1961, President Kennedy launches the Peace Corps, the moon race, cuts the Federal Reserve Bank out of control of the U.S. money system. The CIA asks for Air Force help to invade Cuba, and President Kennedy says no, no invasion. The CIA suffers the worst losses in its history. 400 CIA agents killed in a single operation, 1,100 captured in the Bay of Pigs invasion. In order to try and prevent that from happening again, President Kennedy fired the heads of the CIA, Allen Dulles, General Charles Cabell, and your host, Paul Kangas, works as a Navy guard for President Kennedy in Washington, D.C. The Civil Rights Movement picks up steam to expand voting and job rights for minorities in the United States. 1962, the CIA cons President Kennedy into a second invasion of Cuba. Paul Kangas is given orders to join the invasion of Cuba, and it's known as the Navy's Operation Vertical Envelopment. And at the U.S. Naval Air Station in Patuxent River, Maryland, a secret base for the invasion of Cuba. But instead, what I did was organize the mutiny there. President Kennedy offers peace to Russia, offers to withdraw U.S. missiles from Turkey if the USSR will withdraw its missiles from Cuba. That seems fair if the U.S. pulls its missiles out of Turkey, and so the Russians do. President Kennedy cuts the oil depletion allowance to the oil companies, which is basically welfare for the oil companies. Kennedy then jails executives of U.S. Steel for violating his price controls. And these moves by Kennedy anger Prescott Bush and the CIA. In 1962, the civil rights movement and Dr. Martin Luther King's family is subjected to heavy U.S. Army harassment, spying, and illegal arrests. 1963, President John Kennedy orders all U.S. personnel out of Vietnam by Christmas. CIA fears loss of the drug cash cow source of funding coming from Vietnam and doubles the Air America flights to New York City and Oakland. The CIA plans a third secret invasion of Cuba based in New Orleans, but President Kennedy uncovers it and orders the FBI to arrest the CIA agents in New Orleans, where E. Howard Hunt has his office with Guy Bannister, Guy Fieri, Lee Harvey Oswald, and such. This is how Jim Garrison becomes aware of the CIA's role in the assassination of President Kennedy. Then, CIA agent Alan Dulles began to plan to kill President Kennedy. October 3rd, 1963, the New York Times has an article by Arthur Kroc openly discussing about the CIA's plan to kill President Kennedy, thus alerting the whole ruling class to the plans to kill Kennedy. The article is available. If you'd like a free copy, please write to us at P.O. Box 422-644, San Francisco 94142, or go look in the library for the New York Times article by Arthur Kroc, October 3rd, 1963. In preparation for the CIA assassination of President Kennedy, people like Fletcher Prouty and your host, Paul Kangas, are sent out of the United States. Fletcher Prouty was sent to the South Pole to keep him from uncovering the plot to kill JFK, as were hundreds of other military liberals, such as myself. I was sent to Iceland in September of 63 to prevent any sort of protest, since they know I had participated in protests against the invasion of Cuba. Back when I was participating in the invasion of Cuba, they knew I would protest the assassination of President Kennedy. Now it gets interesting. E. Howard Hunt, Frank Sturgis, Bernard Barker, and most of the Watergate crew meet with Marita Lorenz and George Bush, meet in Miami to plan the JFK assassination. That is the last leg of it. November 8th, FBI agent Lee Harvey Oswald, agent number 179, according to FBI's own records, sends a letter from Dallas to E. Howard Hunt at 544 Camp Street in New Orleans. And in the letter, Oswald asks Hunt, what is the next step? Hunt doesn't answer, so Oswald realizes this is it, and he alerts the FBI. November 15th, Oswald goes into the FBI office in Dallas and alerts them that the CIA is planning to kill President Kennedy in Dallas November 22nd, 1963. A telex is sent out on November 17th. The FBI office in Dallas sends an alert to all FBI agents in the nation. Jim Garrison later obtained a copy of this and is in many books. The alert, it was shown to Hoover in Dallas and is immediately withdrawn by Hoover. And Hoover has all copies picked up out of all offices nationwide. Sturgis, Hunt, and Marita Lorenz drive from Miami to New Orleans, where they meet more CIA people. Hunt and the Cubans then drive to Dallas to kill President Kennedy. Dozens of stock market investors start selling millions of shares of stock hours before Kennedy is shot. After Kennedy is shot, the market crashes 15 points, the largest drop since the great crash of 1929. Then, on the following Monday, the market rises 21 points, the greatest rise in history. Insiders made $500 million in a few days. And you can see that written up in the book Crossfire by Jim Mars under the chapter A Killing on Wall Street. Now things are getting hot. J. Edgar Hoover and his boyfriend Clyde Tolson meet the CIA in Dallas at the Murchison Mansion party with Nixon, Bush, Joan Crawford on November 21st, the day before the assassination. Nixon and Joan Crawford are staying at the Baker Hotel on November 22, 1963, four blocks from the scene of the assassination. This was documented in numerous newspaper articles. Watergate crew E. Howard Hunt, Frank Sturgis arrested in Dallas, Texas for the assassination. Bush, on November 22, 1963, calls the FBI to try and frame another patsy named Parrott, who was actually a right-wing Republican that was an enemy of George Bush's. This is also documented. Then it happens, the JFK assassination. Hoover sends Bush a memo November 29th asking Bush to keep the Miami Cubans quiet about the JFK hit and stop the Cubans from celebrating their success in assassinating President Kennedy. Immediately after that, President Johnson then orders the reinvasion of Vietnam, restores the Federal Reserve, restores the oil depletion allowance to the oil companies, and then in New York City, reporters ask Malcolm X what he thinks of the Kennedy assassination. Malcolm says, well, if you have all these CIA agents wandering all over the world assassinating progressive leaders in Africa, Latin America, Asia, the Middle East, what can you expect but someday the chickens coming home to roost? Because of making that statement, exposing the role of the CIA in the assassination of John Kennedy, Malcolm X is expelled from the CIA-controlled Muslims for saying he thought the CIA killed President John Kennedy. You know, the Muslims organization is infiltrated just like many organizations are. They may not want to recognize that fact, but most people recognize that fact. And that's the reason they have survived when other organizations have disappeared. A long string of eyewitnesses to the assassination of President Kennedy start dropping like flies as the FBI begins covering up for the CIA murder of President Kennedy. One of the first to die is Karen Kaprechnik, the daughter of a prominent TV host who openly talked about knowing JFK was going to be shot days before Kennedy was shot. Her name is spelled K-U-P-C-I-N-E-T, and you can read about it in the book Destiny Betrayed by Di Eugenio. Next witness shot is Jack Zagretti, who said he knew Ruby was going to shoot Oswald, and Zagretti himself is shot to death by the FBI. His name is spelled Z-A-N-G-R-E-T-T-I, Zangretti. Gene Hill, a teacher who saw Hunt and Sturgis shoot President Kennedy and saw Ruby run from the Texas School Book Depository to the grassy knoll, is told by the FBI to shut up about hearing six shots and what she saw or she will die. Jean Hill stays quiet for the next 30 years until she's asked by Jack Anderson to explain what she saw and to participate in Oliver Stone's making of the great movie JFK. Well, that was 1963.
They couldn't cover up what they did on TV. The JFK and Rodney King. You might be black, you might be poor white trash.
All right, okay, now on to 1964. Nixon approaches Lyndon Johnson, and they decide to head off Congress by forming the Warren Commission to keep Congress from investigating the JFK assassination. Gerald Ford runs the Warren Commission, orders the FBI to kill almost 30 eyewitnesses who refused to participate in the cover-up of the CIA killing of President Kennedy. Gerald Ford, you have to remember, interviewed most of the witnesses before the Warren Commission. Gerald Ford wrote most of the Warren Commission report. The witnesses that were killed were people like Gary Underhill, a CIA agent who openly said the CIA killed Kennedy, and Underhill was shot in the head and killed in May of 64 for attempting to reveal the CIA's role. Hugh Ward, New Orleans private investigator working with Hunt, Bannister, and Ferry, was killed along with the mayor of New Orleans when their plane was blown out of the sky by a bomb in the cargo compartment. The bodies just kept falling. People like Teresa Norton, a Ruby employee who was fatally shot to death in 8 of 64 in Dallas. Guy Bannister and Jim Cothey, a reporter. C.D. Jackson and Mary Pinochet Meyer. For more details, please see page 558 of Crossfire by Jim Mars. And now, 1965 rolls around. Dorothy Kilgallen and her secretary, Mrs. Earl Smith, interview Jack Ruby. She calls her editor and says, "I did it. I broke the Kennedy conspiracy story. I'll be in tomorrow with the story." Instead, the CIA, thanks to the orders of Gerald Ford, killed Dorothy Kilgallen and her secretary, Mrs. Earl Smith, and seized the notes and the first draft of Dorothy Kilgallen's story, shortly after Kilgallen interviewed Jack Ruby. Kilgallen had known that the FBI was tracking her. She stopped using her private phone and started only using payphones when she would contact other people she was working on the story with, like Jim Garrison. But she made the mistake of using her hotel room to call her editor, and that's how the FBI knew what she had. It's 1965 now, and the death toll in Vietnam reaches 20,000 children, women, and men murdered in order to protect the drug traffic coming out of Vietnam. Kennedy had not died. All the people, the American veterans and Vietnamese people that were killed in that terrible war, would not have died. That's why we must understand the Kennedy assassination, not because one person is dead, but the process that resulted in the killing of Kennedy and the murdering of millions of other people. 1966. The Warren Commission investigation is still going full speed ahead, the cover-up. Gerald Ford interviews most of the witnesses before the Warren Commission. Ford continues to order the murder of any eyewitnesses who refuse to recant. People such as Lee Bowers testify before Gerald Ford's Warren Commission and are murdered the day after they testify. Gary Underhill, Teresa Norton, Rose Tremaine, and some 40 other eyewitnesses. 1966, the Warren Commission fiction is finally issued as a document. And Mark Lane writes a stirring response, a dissent that cracks the wall of silence. And the war. Now Robert Kennedy may run for president. And according to Jim Mars on page 559 of his great book, Crossfire, the CIA writes documents indicating they fear Jim Garrison may run for vice president along with Robert Kennedy running for president. The greatest fear the CIA has in 66. Now it's 1967. Jim Garrison files his famous lawsuit in March of 1967 against the CIA and Clay Shaw for the murder of President John Kennedy. Lyndon Johnson is secretly told by Prescott Bush in February that he is not re-electable because of the anti-war movement is too strong and because of the blood of JFK is on the hands of Lyndon Johnson. And so Prescott Bush asks Johnson to step aside to let their man Nixon run for office. Nixon starts his campaign for the presidency in 1967. On April 1st, Lyndon Johnson announces on April Fool's Day that he won't run again. The nation is shocked. Robert Kennedy begins a late campaign for the presidency and planning to reopen the Kennedy assassination if he's elected. Civil rights movement is growing stronger in the unions. Dr. King is working to help elect Robert Kennedy president against Nixon. The peace movement is leading huge marches in the streets against the war in Vietnam. Dr. Martin Luther King is calling for a poor people's march on Washington, D.C. Women in the Weather Underground, armed units of the anti-war movement, bomb the Pentagon and flood the basement computer room and shut down the Pentagon for 2 weeks.
the king. Images on the TV screen, our eyes don't lie. We know what we saw, but the powers that be live outside the law. So they hire the media to do their bidding. Who do they think they're kidding? Got his thrill when he questioned Anita Hill. No one tried to overrule it. No one mentioned the magic bullet.
Hello, this is Paul Kangas, and this is side two of a short history of George Bush and Richard Nixon's role in the assassination of President John Kennedy, Dr. Martin Luther King, Dorothy Kilgallen. We continue. Now we're in 1967. And the presidential race is on for 1968. Senator Robert Kennedy and Dr. Martin Luther King call for the U.S. to get out of Vietnam, out of Vietnam. Nixon and Bush fear for their life, their political life, if Robert Kennedy reopens the Kennedy assassination. So they must stop Robert Kennedy. They decide they will try and scare him by assassinating Dr. Martin Luther King. Jack Ruby is injected with cancer cells in 1967 and dies while in jail awaiting trial. September Life magazine creates the lie that Garrison was tied to the mafia. See the book Destiny Betrayed, page 363. Enter 1968. George Bush and Richard Nixon and the CIA actually send 8 Green Beret snipers following Dr. Martin Luther King. All of 1968. They track him from town to town, from meeting to meeting, photographing him, tape recording him. They're going to kill him. In the Army files we have found, the Army said they consider King nothing but the voice of Hanoi here in America. And with his Poor People's March on Washington in 1968, the Army is afraid they're going to have to pull troops out of Vietnam in order to stop the Poor People's March. And if they pull troops out of Vietnam, they may lose the war. The war may come to an end in 1968. So to scare Robert Kennedy, to stop Kennedy from talking about getting the U.S. out of Vietnam, they kill King. But to his credit, Robert Kennedy refuses to stop calling for the U.S. to get out of Vietnam and to take care of domestic issues. Just like now, people are calling for the U.S. to stay out of foreign wars, to take care of the terrible national debt we have here, the poverty, the illiteracy we have in the U.S. Instead, Robert Kennedy even calls louder for the U.S. to feed the poor and get out of Vietnam. Feed the poor, get out of foreign wars. Robert Kennedy then says the only way he's going to be able to uncover who killed his brother is for Robert Kennedy to gain the presidency so he has the power to reopen the investigation into why Kennedy was killed and who did it. April 1968, Army intelligence secretly sends 8 snipers to follow King to Memphis, Tennessee to locate the best sniper position before Dr. Martin Luther King is assassinated in April of 1968. King is assassinated to try and scare Robert Kennedy out of calling for the U.S. to get out of Vietnam. Source, the Memphis Commercial Appeal newspaper, March 21st, Sunday, 1993, by Steve Tompkins. May 1968, Senator Robert Kennedy is assassinated by 3 shots in the back of his head and his back, point blank, from the second gunman, Thane Eugene Caesar, according to the official autopsy. Sirhan stood 5 to 10 feet in front of Robert Kennedy as a hypnotized diversion, similar to the CIA written movie The Manchurian Candidate, meaning Sirhan could not have shot Robert Kennedy. Sirhan worked for George Putnam, the right-wing newscaster who was probably the main media asset the CIA used to control media after the assassination of Robert Kennedy, similar to the way they used Clay Shaw in New Orleans to control the CIA agents who killed President Kennedy, and thus used the media to protect E. Howard Hunt, Ferry, and Bannister from being exposed as the assassins. In June, the CIA will kill Robert Kennedy to maintain the flow of heroin from Vietnam and to maintain the JFK cover-up. Robert Kennedy becomes the 49th person killed directly to maintain the cover-up of the assassination of John Kennedy. With the main opposition shot out of the election, Nixon wins the 1968 election. The death toll in Vietnam has now reached 500,000 people. Vietnamese children, women and men, and American veterans killed to maintain the drug wars. January 31st, Jim Garrison appears on the Johnny Carson Show and reveals the photos of the E. Howard Hunt and Frank Sturgis, arrested in Dallas, Texas, November 22, 1963, to millions of Americans for the first time. Johnny Carson physically stops Garrison from showing the photos live on national television and to continue the cover-up of the role of the CIA in the assassination of President Kennedy. Source, Destiny Betrayed by DiEugenio on page 168. Nixon nearly has a heart attack due to the Johnny Carson Show. July 1968, the CIA actually issues a directive on how to attack Garrison and cover up the role of the CIA in the assassination of President Kennedy. Dr. Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy. This can be found in the book Destiny Betrayed on page 321. November 1968, Nixon wins the election, just like Hitler won, by assassinating most of the major opponents. 1969, Vietnam escalates. Air America continues to ship heroin from Vietnam to Oakland, New York City, New Orleans, and other American cities to make profit for the CIA black bag operations that Congress won't fund. 1970, the death toll in Vietnam reaches 2 million children, women, and men, including the 50,000 U.S. veterans, young people murdered to maintain the control of the heroin from the Pepsi-Cola plants in Laos and Vietnam. 1971, Jack Anderson slips photos of Hunt and Sturgis to the head of the Democratic Party, Larry O'Brien, to try and inspire Larry O'Brien and the Democrats to do something, do anything, to defend the honor of JFK, King, and RFK. But the Democrats are too scared of the CIA to do anything but hide. Larry O'Brien is made baseball commissioner by Nixon to keep him quiet. And now the beginning of the end. 1972, June 17th, CIA agents E. Howard Hunt, Frank Sturgis, Bernard Barker, and Gonzalez are arrested burglarizing the Watergate, trying to recover the photos of Hunt and Sturgis, arrested in Dallas, Texas for the murder of Kennedy, that Jack Anderson had slipped to Larry O'Brien. And also in 1972, Governor George Wallace is shot out of the election on May 15, 1972, thus allowing Nixon to win the South and the elections. According to the Nixon Watergate tapes, even on the tapes, you can hear Nixon talking about how they have to plant McGovern literature in Bremer's apartment to try and point the finger at the McGovern candidacy to steer the FBI away from discovering that Nixon was behind the assassination attempt on Governor George Wallace. The reason they shot Wallace out of the race is because Wallace was out Nixoning Nixon and would have thus taken the race from Nixon, and McGovern would have become president in 72, just like Ross Perot's running in 1972 took the election away from Bush and gave it to Clinton. And then, in 72, a very significant event happens. Two investigative journalists, Michael Canfield and A.J. Weberman, are examining photos from Dallas when the Watergate burglary pictures appear on the front pages of the New York Times. They compare the photos from the cover of the New York Times with the photos from Dallas and notice a striking resemblance between E. Howard Hunt and Frank Sturgis and the so-called tramps arrested assassinating President Kennedy. 1973, the Vietnamese people win the war against the U.S. invaders. 1974, Woodward and Bernstein publish All the President's Men about the Watergate burglary attempt to plug up the leaks about the JFK assassination. Even in the footnotes of the books, they say they investigated numerous references to the Kennedy assassination that they discovered while they were investigating the Watergate burglary. August 74, Nixon resigns. Gerald Ford of the Warren Commission sworn in and pardons Nixon again. 1975, the great investigators Michael Canfield and A.J. Weberman published the first book on the Kennedy assassination that correctly identifies the actual CIA assassins of John Kennedy as E. Howard Hunt and Frank Sturgis. The book, Coup d'etat in America. The CIA immediately files a libel lawsuit against them, putting the publisher out of business. All during the 80s, there are various stories about Hunt and Sturgis killing Kennedy, but the media is able to suppress these. This is one of the second great conspiracy. The media is covering up the assassination. How is it that ABC, NBC, and CBS cooperate hand in glove with the CIA to cover up the major felony crimes of the CIA, meanwhile, but allow some discussion of the misdemeanor crimes committed by the CIA and the FBI? Now we're in 1988. Jack Anderson produces a dramatic TV special with an interview of E. Howard Hunt and Frank Sturgis, and they practically confess on the television show that Hunt and Sturgis were the actual assassins of John Kennedy. And in 1988, the San Francisco Examiner discovers FBI memo indicating George Bush was involved in the murder of President Kennedy and was part of the cover-up. The Nation magazine uncovers another FBI memo indicating George Bush was involved in the JFK assassinations. The article in the San Francisco Examiner was published August 25, 1988, on page A11. The articles in the Nation magazine were published 7/16/88 and 8/13/88.
Al Inspector got his thrill when he questioned Anita Hill. No one tried to overrule it. No one mentioned the magic bullet. They just hired the media to do their bidding. Who do they think they're kidding? Read my lips, read between the lines. It's read the evidence locked up their mind. In the land of free trade, we trade in fear. Make sure they don't read it. Make sure they don't heed. No, no, no. Federal Reserve. He tried to stop the dogs of war, to house the homeless and feed the poor.
In 1990, I wrote the first article on the role of George Bush and Richard Nixon's role in the assassination of President John Kennedy. Handed out 10,000 copies throughout the Bay Area. 1991. March 1991, the first major article on the role of George Bush and Richard Nixon in the JFK assassination is published in the Realist magazine by the famous editor Paul Krasner. I wrote that article. It was then carried in newspapers and radio stations around the country. 70 radio stations read the article as if it was coming straight off the AP wire service. Another 50 magazines and newspapers republished the article word for word as a breakthrough article on the assassination of Kennedy. I received excellent reviews from individuals all over the country who read the article. And in 1991, the San Francisco Mime Troupe, the world-famous San Francisco Mime Troupe, produced a play entitled Back to Normal, which contained material on the role of George Bush and Richard Nixon in the assassination of John Kennedy. In fact, the Mime Troupe used the famous tramp photos in it. Then, in 1991, Oliver Stone's movie, JFK, came out. This movie broke the ice on researching the assassination of John Kennedy. It made it mainstream, made it acceptable. for the first time. Stone's movie was subjected to numerous attacks all through 1990. In fact, it was the attacks on Oliver Stone's movie that created the radio program Reality Sandwich, in which the first few weeks of the program were devoted simply to serializing Jim Garrison's great book, On the Trail of the Assassins, since the movie was being based on that. And I knew that, and I wanted the public to at least hear what the movie was based on in case the movie was shut down. Then, in 1991, Life magazine published an article on Oliver Stone's movie, JFK, in which they quote this line out of Life magazine, I quote, "Stone's imagery for Kennedy, well, now Arthurian, remains regal, and his sense of injustice sublime." Quote, "The Kennedy myth is a bit like America's Hamlet story," Stone says. "Kennedy is the king who was murdered. There's been an ugly succession of kings in this country, none of whom worked, really worked, and we, the American people, are like Hamlet before the first act, waiting to find out that there is a false king who sits on the throne." In Hamlet, of course, the false king was also the murderer, and even Stone does not go so far as some others like Paul Kangas, who trace a CIA plot from the Bay of Pigs to Watergate to George Bush. This was in the December issue of Life magazine on page 44. Then, the really blockbuster news. In 1992, the once banned book, Coup d'Etat in America, by the famous authors Michael Canfield and A.J. Weberman, is republished by a courageous publisher in Berkeley, Quick American Publishers. That is probably the most significant news in 1992. Then, in November 21st, 1993, the AP published a poll showing that 82% the Americans think they have not been told the whole truth. 78% of the Americans think there was an official cover-up of the assassination of President Kennedy. And, according to the AP poll, who do Americans most suspect was involved in the assassination of John Kennedy? Surprise, surprise. 56% of the American public believe the CIA. They suspect the CIA was involved. Another 29% suspect the Pentagon was involved. Can you imagine these numbers? The CIA must be going crazy trying to figure out how to respond to these numbers. Another 28% suspect Lyndon Johnson was involved before, during, and after the assassination, and especially the cover-up. 17 suspect anti-Castro Cuban exiles working with the CIA in Miami and in New Orleans. So, you can see that all the propaganda, all the Oswald stuff, didn't work. Majority of the American public knows that on the Kennedy assassination, it was the CIA who killed John Kennedy. Oswald isn't even in the running. Then, the 30th anniversary of the Kennedy assassination conference happens in Dallas. Unfortunately, by this time, the CIA seems to have taken over the Dallas conference, so they put a speaker, one of the probably the worst possible speaker is selected, Norman Mailer, who does nothing but say the word Oswald, Oswald, Oswald over and over in a stupid mantra taught to him by the CIA. And then, in November of 93, Frank Sturgis dies of anal cancer. And also, Pat Nixon died from a heart attack, 1993, talking to a coroner's office investigator down in the area where Pat Nixon died in Southern California. Apparently, from the evidence in the living room, Pat Nixon and Richard Nixon had checked out a video, were watching a video when Pat Nixon had a massive heart attack and died in their living room. And very interestingly, the video they were watching was Oliver Stone's JFK. Then, of course, and then Nixon died on Earth Day, April 22nd, 1994. Mother Earth strikes the final blow into the rotten heart of Richard Nixon. Okay, that's the timeline. Now, to go into a little bit of material like this. Nobody has ever written a book entitled why JFK was killed. Although some of the books written, and especially Jim Marr's book, Crossfire, came very close to answering many of the questions of why JFK was killed. So let me just give you a thumbnail sketch quickly of why JFK was killed and how you can document this and verify this. Probably the number one reason that Kennedy was killed was because he had ordered the troops out of Vietnam and was stopping the Vietnam War. There were many very wealthy people who had huge investments in the heroin traffic coming out of Vietnam and the tin and the tungsten. And plus, they had discovered vast oil deposits off the southern coast of Vietnam, and the oil companies wanted that oil. So those factors all came together, and the military-industrial complex decided that Vietnam was the next resource the United States military-industrial complex needed, and they were not going to rest until they got Vietnam so they could control the markets of Asia. So when Kennedy tried to stop the war, they decided they were going to get rid of Kennedy. And then Kennedy fired the head of the CIA, Allen Dulles, and several of his lieutenants, Cabell and several others. That was strike number two. Strike number three was when Kennedy cut off the oil depletion allowance, which was basically welfare for the oil companies. And strike number four was when Kennedy cut off the air cover for the invasion of Cuba, thus causing the CIA to suffer their greatest loss ever in the history of the agency, 400 plus of their agents killed. And strike number five would be when Kennedy canceled the contract with the Federal Reserve and tried to take control of the monetary system back for the U.S. You'll notice the money that was issued under the Kennedy administration said U.S. notes on it, not Federal Reserve notes. If you'd like a free copy of one of these $5 bills, send me a self-addressed stamped envelope to P.O. Box 422-644, San Francisco 94142, and we'll send you a Xerox copy of one of those, but you probably know about that. And finally, strike number six was when Kennedy ordered price controls in the country to control inflation, and the president of U.S. Steel thumbed his nose at the president and raised prices on U.S. Steel, and Kennedy promptly slapped the president of U.S. Steel in jail, which is the first and probably the last time the president of a major U.S. corporation was put in jail for violating presidential orders. And strike number seven occurred in 1962 when Kennedy discovered that the CIA was secretly planning a third invasion of Cuba based in New Orleans. So Kennedy ordered the FBI to go down to New Orleans Lake Pontchartrain and arrest the CIA agents training there, seize their guns and ammunition and C4 explosive, and disbanded that branch of the CIA. So those are some of the reasons basically why the CIA felt they had to kill Kennedy. And the military-industrial complex, probably one of the most interesting articles pointing to the accumulation of this is the article out of the New York Times of October 3rd, 1963, pointing out that the CIA was totally beyond control of the president and was, if there ever was an assassination of the president, it would come from the CIA and not the Pentagon. When, in fact, it came from the CIA and the Pentagon and the major media in this country, might even call it military media, ABC, CBS, and NBC. All right, that's a short thumbnail sketch, not only of why Kennedy was killed, but a timeline sequence showing the important events that happened. We're publishing a small book on this, and if you would like a copy, please send $5 and ask for it. Also, we're producing a CD of the music you heard on the other audio tape. So if you're interested in any of these products, please call our office at 415-897-0153. We produce these products in order to fight the CIA, to continue the work that Kennedy began, the disbanding of the CIA. and taking back control of this country from the military-industrial complex. There's a war going on in this country, so we don't need to be involved in overseas wars. We've got enough trouble right here cutting the CIA budget, even though Clinton's raising it, and stopping the national debt. The best way to stop the national debt would be to impose a five-year debt moratorium in which none of the bonds are paid off while we have time to reorganize the economy. And the second best thing would be to place a 50% capital tax on the million richest families in the United States who hold the bonds, and that way collect the money from the people that have been collecting the interest all these years and cancel those bonds, pay off the debt in total, and then tear up that credit card so that we don't get into that debt again. If you have any ideas and opinions, please write to us or call us, 415-897-0153. Our mailing address is P.O. Box 4, 22644, San Francisco 94142. We have a twice weekly radio program in San Francisco on Tuesday morning at 7:30 a.m., Thursday morning at 10 a.m., and we have a once a month television show that can be seen on different channels in the Bay Area. If you would like a copy of our two-hour videotape on this same topic, please call us. We rent the videotape out for $7 a month. Send us $22. We'll send you the tape. When you send the tape back, we send you a refund of the $15 difference. And you can then use the videotape in your local community, put it on your community cable access television station, and broadcast some alternative views on the secret government that still dominates our society. If you don't do it, who will? If you don't act, who will? We make this tape to put power in your hands, give you some idea of the direction that we need to go to get back control of this country from the military-industrial complex. While Clinton is in power, we have a slight advantage. We should use it. Odds are Clinton will be reelected in 1996 because of the phenomenon of the 80 million baby boomers in this country aged 35 to 45 who are gaining economic and political power in this country right now and are driving the economy upward for the next 12 years. So odds are Clinton will be reelected, and if so, we have a little bit more time to release the Nixon-Watergate tapes. One of the key pieces of evidence in the Kennedy assassination is the 4,000 hours of secret Watergate tapes. So we need to release those. If you're interested in petitioning to help us, please write to us and get a copy of the petition. There's a lot going on right now, a lot to be done, and this is a good time to do it. Thank you for listening. We appreciate you taking the time to listen, and we hope that you'll make copies of this tape and pass it on to friends, sell it to friends, get the word spread as widely as you can. We have no copyright on this material. We simply want the ideas out. So if you can make money getting these ideas out, more power to you. This has been your host, Paul Kangas. This program, thank you for listening.
Set us free. Whoa, no truth. peace you gave us all.